I'm Hanin David from PMG. Hanin David from PMG.
Objections were the ones that that is pissed off to the disqualification cap is what point would pass it out in the act. When there are objections, we will then give the candidate an opportunity to respond to those, because the nature of the objections we receive were okay, in some cases someone represented a specific person and they didn't appreciate the outcome of that. But before I continue, we had a member, Alan, and a TV celebrity. If you could just introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chair. Alan here, Alan.
And member Alan was on TV very early this morning. So he was the only one who didn't get stuck in traffic. And then at the end of the, after we started the objection, we will then give the candidates that have questions, clarity, etc. We will then be able to ask that, or if members have any questions to their responses, etc. And then we'll keep
it. Thank you, Chair. This is for the voters, the entire Chair, so it's going to be the only one to find the question.
Yes.
Or the
unless the question that you asked, and then I'm
sure
what you have seen. I don't know if divine interpretation is my share. And then in terms of just a question, so are members happy for us using this as the official process?
Thank you, Chair. I'm in agreement that we seeing the work in the head, so it would certainly be the working on these days on the day in our group.
I'm taking it out of my copy, the one that should be printed. Because, yeah, because when we spoke about it last week, we agreed that doesn't really put into this process. So we agree, and then also another proposal from my side would be, at the end of the day, do we want to every day have a discussion on the candidates that we've interviewed? And the question is, do we want to make that committee business only for the committee? And then on Wednesday, we've got final deliberations, also only for committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'm good. Can I just one point, if possible? If the interviews could not be interviewed at one, I'm not sure that that's a general. If it still happens, and the has one to bring those that can come forward for the Germans, if it's possible, logistically and administratively.
So each candidate has a time aside for them, but if that candidate is here and we are under an early fair, I agree that we can start. Members, in terms of apologies for this meeting, I haven't received any apologies in one interview. So we haven't received anything from Member Javier Blanquez from Altamar. I did try to call him over the weekend and on Friday, but that's been unsuccessful. And we also tried to call him this morning. Altamar is not they're not here. The Member Baku Baku Four should be storming in anytime soon, hopefully. Just also, members, to remind you, what was agreed was that in the event that members cannot participate in the full process, it will only be the members that are here to start interviews that will sit through the whole process. And the responsibility in terms of the rules of order is that if members are not able to attend the meeting, they must appoint an alternate from the pool of options that they have. And we haven't received any notification that that has been done. Member McKinney.
Thank you, Chairperson. I concur with your decision on that. And I also like to add that only any member can attend as an observer, but members who are not going to be part of this process, because the unsafe candidate X coming today, the unsafe candidate Y coming Wednesday, that certain members may be included in the process. It is, as you said, not fully part of this process.
And then, members, also just to bring to your attention, we have received communication from two candidates. So initially, we shortlisted 15 candidates out of the 59 nominations. And we have received correspondence from two candidates to indicate that they are no longer interested in fulfilling the role. The one is Dr. Martin LaRue. Dr. LaRue has indicated that she will have to withdraw from being considered and will therefore not interview for the position of Progress Commissioner. And also Ms. Samantha Lindsay-Altertain has also removed her name from the pool of candidates for consideration. So we are going to be interviewing 12 candidates, and starting from 13 candidates. The last one, Dr. Altertain was number 13 on my list, so I just read from the top. But the candidates that we will be interviewing this morning tonight, especially Ms. Ingrid Elizabeth Lestrade. From 10 to 11, we will be interviewing Dr. Eric Hathmore. We will then hopefully take a break from 11 to 11:30. And when we come back, we will have Ms. Carol Bauer from 11 to 12:30. Lunch will be at 12:30 to 1:30. And then our fourth candidate for the day will be Ms. Ms. Christine Longo, and then our fifth candidate is Ms. Christelle Anita Oliver. And then tomorrow we will convene at 9 tomorrow morning, where our first candidate will be Professor Lucas Ruti, the second one Dr. Alexandra Lakrika. Then at 11:30, 12:30, we will be interviewing Ms. Lazar Africa. And then from 12:30 to 1:30, there will be lunch. And then we will then interview from 1:30 until 2:30, Ms. Akira Mohammed. And then from 2:30 to 3:30, Ms. Gabriela McKellar. Then on Wednesday, we will also be starting at 9, and we will then interview from 9 to 10, Ms. Joy van der Heide. From 10 to 11, Ms. Lydia Ann Clarkies. We'll take a break from 11 to 1:30. So we'll have a little short counter break, and then we'll interview Ms. Miranda Kwan from 1:30 to 2:30. It's been very difficult to get the schedule and to get all of these people and start with it, because as you can imagine from the CVs, a lot of them are very important jobs. So thank you, Namonde and Ben, for the last few weeks while we were all on December holidays, making sure that the candidates are selected and they were invited. And as the team members, we want at the end of the day's proceedings, sit and briefly consider our resolutions. I was just wondering why we're breaking at 11 to 1:30 on the Wednesday, but that's just because we had the two candidates that withdrew. That was supposed to be a next slot. We were supposed to have one this morning, but we slotted it up. But perhaps we wonder if Ms. Guan is available to come early, we can check on Wednesday if she could follow that slot.
Yes.
So we can do 30 before we break,
yeah,
not the end earlier. Members, we have agreed that the full interviews, the full set of interviews will be open, but the committee business and the deliberation will discuss that on our own. And then, members, we've now just received at 8:44 for a meeting that was supposed to start at 8, a letter of apology from Member Khalil Brunkek from Al Jamal, and he says that he will not be able to attend today and the rest of the meeting due to personal obligations. So he won't be here for the whole week, and he hasn't appointed an alternate, he hasn't engaged with Member Khalil to find that she could be an alternate. And very difficult even for us to find that money will come over today. It's a constituency day to sacrifice for us. So that's one apology noted. And then also the mind that is we've got a considerable amount of interest in the public has been present in interviews, and we're hoping that process happens. I think maybe something that I should also just indicate is I don't think there's a class to know that generally all of our work in the provincial parliament is public, and we welcome members of the public to participate. So when we start this process just after May, every single step of the process has been open, and our colleagues and peers have made sure that the information and discussions are available. So for today, the role of the public during the interviews is going to be as observers. So as we have been, members of the committee will participate. Other members of the parliament are welcome to attend as observers, as well as members of the public. What we've also done is we've made information available. We've asked each of the candidates to submit a short biography, which has been on the parliamentary website for a few weeks now. So that's been available. And just being mindful, we don't have any part of our reports here. Are you happy with us just waiting for people to find where she is, if she's in the building?
I'm part of an NGO group called
as conservatives process, and we submitted a statement to the chairperson and to members of the committee. I just want to know if the committee, one, received the statement, and two, if the committee has considered the statement, and if we haven't received any response with regard to that.
Thank you very much. So it's your mission and comments were received, and it has been sent to the committee. We're just waiting for the other members of the committee to join us before we discuss. But we have started this afternoon. We will be deliberating that. At the moment today, we've got our agenda plotted for the interviews. But we have received it. We haven't had an opportunity to sit. So we received your submission last week, and the next committee joined a cluster of committees on the West Coast last week where we visited different service delivery impact points. We haven't had an opportunity to discuss it, but the submission was shared quite widely, I think, with all members of Parliament. The MOU has received it. But we will have a discussion about this. I'm hoping that we can do it also when Member Bakuba calls us here. So are you all happy to start up the tea? I think there's tea and fruit. In the dining room.
Summary of that. You've seen this email
should ask it. You would think that something should be in front of you. When the NGOs and the citizens are concerned related to public participation, and they've also made recommendations to strengthen public participation. One of the under the recommendations to strengthen public participation, they say that to improve information and communication to inform the public, children and organisations working with children on the appointment process, the shortest candidate, the interview and selection time, and the criteria to be used to assess the suitability of the candidate, and to invite both public and child representatives to part of the selection panel to assist the committee, and to engage current civil society representatives, NGOs, and CBOs, and the media to form the public organisations and institutions. And then there's a section on the selection criteria, as well as a section on experience and qualification, as well as a declaration of interest, and whether the description of the person being the proper person. And they also ask for details of the interviews, the times and the schedules, where it will take place, whether it will be open to the public. So just in terms of just a broad response to this one from my side, members, just to outline that this committee followed the process in the Commission for Children Act. We've only taken this process forward from when we were elected in May 2016, but this process is about 6 years old, if my understanding is correct. And the public has had extensive communications and much of time a courtesy look at the different public hearings, and I know there were public hearings across the province, and the participation was quite robust in terms of getting members of the public to participate in the legislation. But what we've done from our side is we've advertised quite extensively, advertised both in print media, through radio, we've advertised in television, and through our social partners, and we've also asked members of the public to comment on the nominations that they submitted and to send objections. We've discussed the objections you see, and we've agreed that the objections need to affect the policy and merit. The committee also agreed that the objections should fall into the two categories that we submitted, which were they should be objective in terms of the criteria for disqualification in the act and subjective. And we agreed that the objection should be put forward to the candidate. In terms of creating a shortlist of members, we have hosted a workshop with people who are involved in the drafting of the act. The commission quite a large body of research on what commissioners are supposed to do in other countries, and what hopefully the gap of the shop is for. And we look at the functional areas for the role of the children's commissioner, in that the commission will have the power to monitor, to investigate, to research, to do education, to lobby on behalf of children, to advise on the rights of children, and to do for campaigns to support things. And we've also looked at the qualifications of appointments in terms of the act. In my contribution to this, members, I want to say that we have, I think, met our obligations and the general obligations in terms of public participation. I'm coming from the government. I believe there's a lot more work that needs to be done in the country around public participation. But like I said, this process, I think, especially the process that I've been part of, has been very inclusive. We've had all of our meetings and discussions have been open, and we've had members of the public attend. And we've also given opportunities for members of the public and organizations to nominate candidates, which a lot of them have done. We've also given an opportunity for comment, and during the drafting of the bill, there was quite extensive public participation at the time. I know I was there very early morning and late night to interviews and discussions with the public platform to talk about this process. So just my comment on the submission received from Wolosongolo, although I think that we met one of those requirements, some great days to get this process to where it is. But I'm now going to hand over to members if you'd
Thank you, Chair. In my opinion, I think we make everything possible for everyone. So I concur with you, Chair, if you can continue.
Thank you very much, Member. So we are now going to move on to the interview process, and we're handing you the pass and give Mrs. Estrada.
Thank you. So I bring fundraising, I bring research.
work of different people in terms of NGOs, in terms of government itself, in terms of the private sector. I've got many relationships with different corporates, etc., etc. So just a wide variety of also management experience in terms of staff management and labor and all those things.
And in your understanding, which government departments are tasked with delivering on the constitutional rights of children, would you be prepared to support
them? I think couple of the key departments are the Department of Education. I think driving around and walking around in different communities, one of the questions I always ask myself is, why are primary school children not in school? And one of my things that I have to come up with is trying to get rural children into school, and particularly farm children. And I've managed to get 100% attendance rate in terms of schools and talking to schools as to why they say that when a child is 7 years old, they cannot be sent to school when they want to go to school. So I think it's talking, finding out who the people are, who one can talk to, talking to them in such a way that they have the necessary correct data available to share with them, and talking in such a way that you put at the center of your conversation the best interests of the child. The other department that is really very important, I think, is community safety of what we have seen around the victim case happening, not just in the case class and in the township, but also in rural communities where children are raped and children are molested, where children are safe in their own homes because of drunken parents and neglect and so forth. So it's important to spread the emphasis of meeting and protecting the children in our whole province. The other one is, if one looks at the Department of Sport and Arts and Culture, they would be important from a recreational perspective, because I think when you build confidence and self-esteem and resilience has to do with the safe recreation spaces that are lacking within our community. And those who are there are not safe because there are people who are selling drugs or using our children, etc., etc. So those are three important departments that I can think of. And then obviously the Department of Finance as well, because we can't do anything without any money, and that needs to be improved as well.
Thank you, Chair. The following question: How will you find out at the grassroots level which children are the most vulnerable and in need of your intervention on their behalf?
I have been tasked
all
my life to set up things from scratch, and one question I've always been: how does one do that when the issues are so overwhelming and haven't been there? One of the things that I've always used is something called participatory methodology, where you educate the local community to collect the necessary data for you, also setting up workshops with the community, interacting with ordinary people to try and find out what are the issues. I mean, one of the things I have used in the past was to approach the Department of Social Development, for example, to talk to their social workers, talk to the police, talk to the magistrates in the local towns and so forth to try and gather information, but also universities. I think they are a huge role in terms of trying to understand. Also going out myself to the communities, as part of the Youth Commission, for example, I was put for a whole community of children are being deprived of the constitutional right and to ascertain what different government departments are doing about it.
I can use an example. Just recently, I'm a trustee of the organization that inspired children and youth, and that organization is
thank you.
of these children once they are arrested. Down to
also been fortunate enough to travel a bit overseas and look at the UK model, for example, addressing children in their schools. They all have assistant teachers coming into their classrooms, assisting with special needs children, which I find in some schools we have that, but in the rural schools, for example, it doesn't exist. So when you do have special needs children, they are labelled as naughty, and they are being put out of the classroom and being disrupted. I think one has to look at what is available currently. One has to look at what examples are available nationally, internationally, from civil society as well, because I think one overlooks sometimes the good initiatives that people have started, and then put together something specifically not only in schools, but also outside of school, like in the school facilities, for example, so that I could pass off on a daily basis, teaching special needs children how to count and how to eat, and from the school perspective, that's the best investment that one can give to children. We just have to find more creative ways of helping children with special needs.
Thank you. I would increase the gap between the children's head and the proper implementation of that on the ground level.
Thank you for that. I think the Children's Act, in terms of implementation on the ground level, for me it's always been about socially removing children from communities and from households. Because that's by far most of the implementation that I've seen on the ground level, which I don't think is the answer, because you're removing children, not always the answer, I can correct myself there, because you're removing children from home, from raising, for example, on the farm, then where do they go to? Because the rest of the family have lived like that for generations. So it's taking the Children's Act, taking what real circumstances are experienced by children, and try and interpret it in such a way that we bring our social departments into action together with civil society in terms of not only focusing on violence, not only focusing on because of the Justice Act, the maintenance, but focusing holistically on what are the needs of the children and what are protections that we can provide to children. And what do children offer our problems as well? Which I think is a bit limited in terms of the current Children's Act.
Following up on that, what experience do you have in setting up a large and medium established office, specifically around budgeting and management of staff?
So I have had quite a number of experiences in terms of which. I've been part of the Youth Commission. Helped to set up those offices, but also try and work together with the media act that was established to establish the Youth Commission in the past. I have been responsible for setting up Kushback Trust, which was going to be a retreat centre for social workers. I turned that around in terms of being a safe space for young people and rural youth in particular. I have also set up the Inspired Children and Youth Trust. I've also been involved currently now with helping a community of farm workers who have been given a farm by government to try and set up structures for them to be compliant, but also for them to address the issues that they are experiencing. So quite a wide range of experience that I have.
Just in terms of part of this role is that monitoring is important, an important aspect of the Commission. So how do you go about creating awareness as to the department mentioned earlier and in the sector and about monitoring and what monitoring tools can be used?
The importance of talking to the department and engaging with them, I think there are a numerous amount of methodologies to be used in terms of monitoring and engaging with departments. To be honest, I think people are tired of reading long documents. I think people are very busy. I think one has to come up with a way in which one adequately working in universities. I think there's a lot of NGOs who are doing a lot of work in monitoring and evaluation. There's been a lot of tools that have been developed. So I think my main thing is to involve those people who we are trying to monitor as well in the development of the process, so that they can understand that as well. And then to serve us in such a way that doesn't waste time when we can involve the sector, and that one of the things is to social media as well to inform people about what is going on.
Thank you. How would you manage the situation where government departments or the executive do not want to cooperate with the office of the commission?
So what I would do is I would find out who would be the most senior person to talk to, and then I would have a conversation with that person. If that doesn't work, then I would have to go to the premier of the province and then talk to him to try and see if one can rectify that and mediate between the relevant parties. If that doesn't work, then I would have to find out a way in which one can address that and possibly parliament as well.
Thank you. You are now the chosen commissioner. How do you think the integrity as the chosen commissioner, of the chosen commissioner, and how do you ensure the functional independence of the commissioner?
This is defending the role of the chosen commissioner in the office of it. I think it's very important that the public and the government understand that it's very important for it to be independent and functional. Because otherwise, how can one fulfill an oversight role and monitoring role? I think, it's about putting the structures or necessary and adequate structures and processes and policies in place. So one of the first things that I would do as a commissioner would be to get the most effective and capacitated staff to try and help me to address those issues and to put the necessary policies in place so that I know how to function and I know which boundaries to work in, and then also try and implement those policies.
Thank you, Chairperson. How would you prioritize then the development and effective changes to make sure that children's rights are protected as a commission?
One hears many stories on the end of what's going on, the nature of violence towards your own communities in which you operate, and it's very dangerous sometimes to just have a single opinion about what is going on. I think one of the key things would be to get a global perspective of what typical perspective, or try and get a typical perspective of what are the issues of the children. And then to try and come up with ways, but again, it boils down to how does one strengthen those who are really involved in it? How does one use the information that is already available to address those issues?
One more question for me. How would you engage NGOs and other relevant stakeholders to have global public partnerships on information and children's rights?
It's really not that, it's not rocket science, if I can say it in that way. I think, NGOs, and I've had my whole career in an NGO and in the nonprofit sector, so I understand the sector very well in terms of how to engage, how to mobilize, what are the interests. You get some very difficult people within the sector, you get some, people who want to see things happen, and you get, people who are corrupt in the sector as well. So I think it's not a even ground. I've been involved in advocacy work, I've been involved in lobbying work, I've been involved in
of quite fast to make sure that it's done. And from the time that we said the prisoner's name, the legislation allows him 3 days, 37 days to respond, and he does it, has to come back to us with reasons why he's not for a candidate. I don't think it's going to be months, it's probably going to be months.
Yes. Is it a
school-going children.